In churches, said the partner, when I preach, I use, my lords, a lofty style of speech and ring it out as roundly as a bell, knowing by rote all that I have to tell. My text is ever the same and ever was. Radix malorum est cupiditas. First, I inform them whence I come. That done, I then display my papal bulls, each one. Bulls in the name of cardinals I show. I say in Latin some few words or so. Then I display my cases made of glass, crammed to the top with rags and bones. They pass for relics with the people in the place. I have a sheep's bone in a metal case. Good men, I say, dip this bone in a well, and if cow, calf, or sheep, or ox should swell from eating a worm or by a worm be stung, take water from this well and wash its tongue, and it is healed at once. And furthermore, of scab and ulcers and of every sore shall every sheep be cured, and that straightway that drinks from this same well. Heed what I say. If the good man who owns the beasts will go fasting each week and drink before cockcrow out of this well, his cattle shall be brought to multiply and his property increase. Moreover, sir, this bone cures jealousies. Though into a jealous madness a man fell, let him cook his soup in water from this well. He'll never, though for truth he knew her sin, suspect his wife again. But I must say, good men and women, if any here today has done a sin so horrible to name, he daren't be shriven of it for the shame. Or if any woman young or old is here who has cuckolded her husband, be it clear they may not make an offering in that case to these my relics. They have no power nor grace. But any who is free of such dire blame, let him come up and offer in God's name, and I'll absolve him through the authority that by the Pope's bull has been granted me. By such skulduggery I've won year by year 100 marks since being a partner. I stand in pulpit like a true divine, and when the people sit, I preach my line. I take care to stretch my neck well out, and over the people I nod and peer about just like a pigeon perching on a shed. My hands fly and my tongue wags in my head so busily that to watch me is a joy. Avarice is the theme that I employ. That's why my text is still and ever was Radix malorum est cupiditas. For by this text I can denounce indeed the very vice I practice, which is greed. I won't ape the apostles. I must eat. I must have money, wool, and cheese, and wheat, and have a jolly wench in every town. But in conclusion, lords, I will get down to business. You would have me tell a tale. Now that I've had a drink of malty ale, by God, I hope the thing I'm going to tell is one that you'll have reason to like well, for though myself a very sinful man, I can tell a moral tale. Indeed I can. One that I used to bring the prophets in while preaching. Now be still, and I'll begin. There was a company of young folk living one time in Flanders who were bent on giving their lives to follies and extravagances, brothels and taverns where they held their dances, with lutes, harps, and guitars, diced at all hours, and also ate and drank beyond their powers, through which they paid the devil's sacrifice in the devil's temple with their drink and dice. Their abominable excess and dissipation, they swore oaths that were worthy of damnation, grisly to hear. To encourage their pursuits came comely dancing girls, peddlers of fruits, singers with harps, bawds and confectioners who are the very devil's officers to kindle and blow the fire of lechery that is the follower of gluttony. Witness the Bible, if licentiousness does not reside in wine and drunkenness. Recall how drunken Lot, unnaturally, with his two daughters, lay unwittingly so drunk he had no notion what he did. Herod, the stories tell us, God forbid, when full of liquor at his banquet bar, right at his very table, gave the word to kill the Baptist John, though guiltless he. Seneca says a good word, certainly. He says there is no difference he can find between a man who has gone out of his mind and one who carries drinking to excess. Only that madness outlasts drunkenness. Oh, gluttony, first cause of mankind's fall, of our damnation, the curse original, until Christ bought us with his blood again, how dearly paid for by the race of men. Adam, our father, and his wife also, from paradise to labor and to woe, were driven for that selfsame vice. Indeed, as long as Adam fasted, so I read, he was in heaven. But as soon as he devoured the fruit of that forbidden tree, then he was driven out in sorrow and pain. Of gluttony well ought we to complain. Could a man know how many maladies follow indulgences and gluttonies, he would keep his diet under stricter measure and sit at table with more temperate pleasure. The throat is short and tender is the mouth, and hence men toil east, west, and north, and south, in earth and air and water, alas, to think, fetching a glutton dainty meat and drink. This is a theme, O Paul, that you well treat. Meat unto belly and belly unto meat, God shall destroy them both, as Paul has said. When a man drinks the white wine and the red, this is a foul word by my soul to say, and fouler is the deed in every way, he makes his throat his privy through excess. The apostle says, weeping for piteousness, there are many of whom I told you at a loss, I said, weeping, enemies of Christ's cross, whose belly is their God, their end is death. O cursed belly, sack of stinking breath, great cost it is to fill you and great pain. These cooks, how they must grind and pound and strain. From the hard bones they knock the marrow out, they'll find a use for everything past doubt, that down the gullet sweet and soft will glide. The spiceries of leaf and root provide sauces that are concocted for delight, to give a man a second appetite. O drunken man, disfigured is your face, sour is your breath, foul are you to embrace. You seem to mutter through your drunken nose the sound of Samson, Samson. Yet God knows that Samson never indulged himself in wine. Your tongue is lust. You fall like a stuck swine, and all the self-respect that you possess is gone. For of man's judgment, drunkenness is the very sepulchre and annihilation. A man whom drink has under domination can never keep a secret in his head. Now steer away from both the white and red, and most of all from that white wine, keep wide that comes from Lep. They sell it in Cheapside and Fish Street. 'Tis a Spanish wine, and sly to creep in other wines that grow nearby, and such a vapor it has that with three drinks it takes a man to Spain. Although he thinks he is home in Cheapside, he is far away at Lep. Then Samson, Samson, will he say, by God himself, who is omnipotent, all the great exploits in the Old Testament were done in abstinence, I say, and prayer. Look in the Bible, you may learn it there. Now that I've shown what gluttony will do, now I will warn you against gambling, too. Gambling, the very mother of low scheming, of lying and forswearing and blaspheming against Christ's name, of murder and waste as well, alike of goods and time, and truth to tell, with honor and renown it cannot suit to be held a common gambler by repute. Remember also how the Parthians' lord sent King Demetrius, as the books record, a pair of golden dice. by this proclaiming his scorn, because that king was known for gaming. And the king of Parthia therefore held his crown devoid of glory, value, or renown. Now about oaths, I'll say a word or two. Great oaths and false oaths, as the old books do. Great swearing is a thing abominable, and false oaths yet more reprehensible. If a man's oaths and curses are extreme, vengeance shall find his house, both roof and beam. By the precious heart of God, and by his nails, or my chance is 7, by Christ's blood it hails, yours 5 and 3, or cheat me, and if you do, by God's arms, with this knife I'll run you through. Such fruit comes from the bones, that pair of bitches, oaths broken, treachery, murder. For riches of Christ's love, give up curses without fail, both great and small. Now, sirs, I'll tell my tale. These 3 young roisterers of whom I tell, long before prime had rung from any bell, were seated in a tavern at their drinking, and as they sat, they heard a bell go clinking before a corpse being carried to his grave. One of these roisterers, when he heard it, gave an order to his boy. Go out and try to learn whose corpse is being carried by. Get me his name and get it right. Take heed. Sir, said the boy, there isn't any need. I learned before you came here by 2 hours. He was, it happens, an old friend of yours. And all at once, there on his bench upright as he was sitting drunk, he was killed last night. A sly thief, Death, men call him, who deprives all the people in this country of their lives, came with his spear and, smiting his heart in 2, went on his business with no more ado. 1,000 have been slaughtered by his hand during the plague. And, sir, before you stand within his presence, it should be necessary, it seems to me, to know your adversary. Be evermore prepared to meet this foe. My mother taught me this, that's all I know. Now, by St. Mary, says the innkeeper, this child speaks truth. Man, woman, laborer, servant, and child, the thief has slain this year in a big village a mile or so from here. I think it is his place of habitation. It would be wise to make some preparation before he brought a man into disgrace. God's arms, this roisterer said, so that's the case. Is it so dangerous with this thief to meet? I'll look for him by every path and street, I vow it. By God's holy bones. Hear me, fellows of mine. We are all one, we 3. Let each of us hold up his hand to the other, and each of us become his fellow's brother. We'll slay this Death who slaughters and betrays. He shall be slain whose hand so many slays, by the dignity of God before tonight. The 3 together set about to plight their oaths to live and die each for the other, just as though each had been to each born brother. And in their drunken frenzy, up they get and toward the village off at once they set, which the innkeeper had spoken of before. And many were the grisly oaths they swore. They rent Christ's precious body limb from limb. Death shall be dead if they lay hands on him. When they had hardly gone the first half mile, just as they were about to cross a stile, an old man, poor and humble, met them there and said, God bless you, lords, and be your guide. What's this? The proudest of the 3 replied. Old beggar, I hope you meet with evil grace. Why are you all wrapped up except your face? What are you doing alive so many a year? The old man at these words began to peer into the gambler's face. Because I can, though I should walk to India, find no man, he said, in any village or in any town who, for my age, is willing to lay down his youth. So I must keep my old age still for as long a time as it may be God's will. Nor will death take my life from me, alas. Thus, like a restless prisoner, I pass, and on the ground which is my mother's gate I walk. and with my staff, both early and late, I knock and say, dear mother, let me in. See how I vanish, flesh and blood and skin. And yet she still refuses me that grace. All white, therefore, and withered is my face. But, sirs, you do yourselves no courtesy to speak to an old man so churlishly unless he had wronged you either in word or deed, as you yourselves in holy writ may read. Before an aged man whose head is hoar, man ought to rise. I counsel you, therefore, no harm nor wrong here to an old man do, no more than that you'd wish men do to you in your old age, if you so long abide. And God be with you, whether you walk or ride. I must go yonder, where I have to go. No, you old beggar, by St. John, not so, said another of these gamblers. As for me, by God, you won't get off so easily. You spoke just now of that false traitor, Death, who in this land robs all our friends of breath. Tell where he is, since you must be his spy, or you will suffer for it. So say I, by God and by the Holy Sacrament, you are in league with him, false thief, and bent on killing us young folk, that's clear to my mind. If you are so impatient, sirs, to find Death, he replied, turn up this crooked way, for in that grove I left him, truth to say, beneath a tree, and there he will abide. No boast of yours will make him run and hide. Do you see that oak tree? Just there you will find this Death. And God, who bought again mankind, save and amend you. So said this old man, and promptly each of these three gamblers ran until he reached the tree, and there they found florins of bright gold, minted bright and round, nearly 8 bushels of them, as they thought. And after Death, no longer then they sought. But down they sat beside the precious hoard. The worst of them, he uttered the first word. Brothers, he told them, listen to what I say. My head is sharp for all I joke and play. Fortune has given us this pile of treasure to set us up in lives of ease and pleasure. Lightly it comes, lightly we'll make it go. God's precious dignity. Who was to know we'd ever tumble on such luck today? If we could only carry this gold away home to my house, or either one of yours, for well you know that all this gold is ours, we'd touch the summit of felicity. Still, by daylight, that can hardly be. People would call us thieves, too bold for stealth, and they would have us hanged for our own wealth. It must be done by night. That's our best plan, as prudently and slyly as we can. Hence, my proposal is that we should all draw lots, and let's see where the lot will fall. And the one of us who draws the shortest stick should run back to the town and make it quick and bring us bread and wine here on the sly, and two of us will keep a watchful eye over this gold, and if he doesn't stay too long in town, we'll carry this gold away by night, wherever we agreed is best. One of them held the cut out in his fist and had them draw to see where it would fall, and the cut fell on the youngest of them all. At once he set off on his way to town, and the very moment after he was gone, the one who urged this plan said to the other, you know that by sworn oath you are my brother. I'll tell you something you can profit by. Our friend has gone, that's clear to any eye, and here is gold, abundant as can be, that we propose to share alike, we three. But if I worked it out as I could do, so that it could be shared between us two, wouldn't that be a favor, a friendly one? The other answered, How can that be done? I do not see. He knows we have the gold. What shall we do, or what shall he be told? I won't betray you, that you can believe. No, said the first. We are two, as you perceive, and two of us must have more strength than one. When he sits down, get up as if in fun and wrestle with him. While you play this game, I'll run him through the ribs. You do the same with your dagger there, and then this gold shall be divided, my dear friend, between you and me. Then all that we desire we can fulfill, and both of us can roll the dice at will. Thus, in agreement, these two scoundrels fell to slay the third, as you have heard me tell. The youngest, who had started off to town within his heart, kept rolling up and down the beauty of these florins, new and bright. Oh, Lord, he thought, were there some way I might have all this treasure to myself alone? There isn't a man who dwells beneath God's throne could live a life as merry as mine should be. And so at last the fiend, our enemy, put into his head that he could gain his ends if he bought poison to kill off his friends. So off he set, no longer would he tarry, into the town to an apothecary, and begged for poison strong and virulent. Taking the poison off, the scoundrel went holding it in a box, and next he ran to the neighboring street and borrowed from a man three generous flagons. He emptied out his drug in two of them and kept the other jug for his own drink. He let no poison lurk in that. And so all night he meant to work carrying off the gold. Such was his plan. And when he had filled them, this accursed man retraced his path, still following his design, back to his friends with his three jugs of wine. But why dilate upon it any more? For just as they had planned his death before, just so they killed him, and with no delay. When it was finished, one spoke up to say, "Now, let's sit down and drink, and we can bury his body later on. First, we'll be merry." And as he said the words, he took the jug that, as it happened, held the poisonous drug and drank, and gave his friend a drink as well, and promptly they both died. And truth to tell, in all that Avicenna ever wrote, he never described in chapter, rule, or note more marvelous signs of poisoning, I suppose, than showed in these two wretches at the close. Thus they both perished for their homicide, and thus the traitorous poisoner also died. Oh, sin accursed above all cursedness! Oh, treacherous murder! Oh, foul wickedness! Oh, gambling, lustfulness, and gluttony! Traducer of Christ's name by blasphemy and monstrous oaths, through habit and through pride, alas, mankind! Ah, how may it betide that you to your Creator, he that wrought you, and even with his precious heart's blood bought you, so falsely and ungratefully can live. And now, good men, your sins may God forgive and keep you specially from avarice. My holy pardon will avail in this, for it can heal each one of you that brings his pennies, silver brooches, spoons, or rings. Come! Bow your head under this holy bull. You wives, come, offer up your cloth or wool. I write your names here in my roll. Just so, into the bliss of heaven you shall go. I will absolve you here by my high power, you that will offer, as clean as in the hour when you were born. Sirs, thus I preach. And now Christ Jesus, our soul's healer, show you how within his pardon evermore to rest. For that I will not lie to you is best. And in my tale, sirs, I forgot one thing. The relics and the pardons that I bring here in my pouch, No man in the whole land has finer given me by the Pope's own hand. If any of you devoutly wants to offer and have my absolution, come and proffer whatever you have to give. Kneel you down here humbly and take my pardon full and clear. Or have a new fresh pardon, if you like, at the end of every mile of road we strike. Indeed, it is an honor I confer on each of you, an authentic pardoner going along to absolve you as you ride. For in the country mishaps may betide. One or another of you in due course may break his neck by falling from his horse. Think what security it gives you all that in this company I chance to fall, who can absolve you each, both low and high, when the soul, alas, shall from the body fly.